I'm Denise.
She's a non-fiction editor. And I'm Louise.
She's a fiction editor. And together,
we're the Editing Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Editing Podcast. So this week, we're talking about how to find a professional academic editor or proofreader.
Yeah, that's right. Now, if you've never worked with an editor before, it's critical that you've already worked out what type of help you want.
Yeah, so you might need developmental editing, support that helps you ensure the structure of your work is in good shape, or you might need stylistic line editing, help so that your sentences flow well and are engaging for your audience.
Or perhaps you need a more technical copy edit that ensures your grammar, spelling and punctuation are working and that your references are styled appropriately. Or you might need a final proofread, a quality control check to make sure your work's in tip-top condition.
Yeah, and if you're not quite sure what type of support you need, ask for guidance from a colleague, someone who's got experience of publishing and of being edited.
Or make it part of the conversation when you finally choose a few academic editors to get in touch with.
Yeah, any professional editor worth their salt should be able to advise you if you explain what kinds of problems you want help with and what you want to achieve.
Exactly. So we always advise breaking the process of finding an editor into two parts. First, the initial research, and then the refinement process.
Yeah, and I think it makes absolute sense to break it down like that because there are slightly different things involved with it. Mm. So let's take a look at the options for that initial search, first of all. So a great first step is your National Editorial Society. That's because many of them have membership directories, and those are a lot smaller and easier to navigate than Google or some other search engine, which means you can concentrate your search on finding the perfect academic editor for you.
So some examples are the directories hosted by the Chartered Institute of Editing and Proofreading, the CIP, which we are both members of, the Society of Editors, or ACES, also called ACES, and AFEPE, which is a professional hub for editors based on the island of Ireland.
And then there's IPED, which is Australia and New Zealand's primary membership body, Editors Canada, and Mediterranean Editors and Translators, or MET.
Yes.
And this is a transnational membership body. There are more, so rather than go through them, we'll pop a link into the show notes so you can decide on what suits you.
Yeah, yeah. So another reason why this is a good first option is because you can search using keywords. So let's say your academic specialism is sociology. You can narrow your search so that you can get people who have experience of editing or proofreading that specific subject area.
Yeah, or if you're a philosopher, you search for people who've specifically stated that they're comfortable working on that kind of material. Because the fact is that some editors might be more comfortable editing or proofreading certain types of academic texts than others.
Definitely, definitely. We've colleagues who tend to work on various texts in the humanities, whereas others may be STEM specialists.
Yeah, for people who might not be familiar, STEM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering and Maths. And it's worth saying that some of the professional associations, like the Chartered Institute of Editing and Proofreading, for example, won't allow a member to advertise in their directory unless they meet certain criteria.
Yeah, that's true. So for the CIP, you have to be able to demonstrate experience and training. Mm. And I think that's really important, actually, because it means academics can feel confident knowing that they're engaging with editors who are fit for purpose.
Yeah, because being an editor isn't like being a doctor, is it? Anyone can set up and call themselves a professional editor or proofreader, which makes it really difficult for academics to work out who's genuine, who's got those skills.
Absolutely, yeah. And we shouldn't forget that a national editorial society is likely to have some sort of code of practice that every member has to sign up for.
Yeah, again, that's something the CIEP has. And you're right, Denise, it's absolutely worth looking out for that because it protects you to a degree.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So the second place to do an initial search is the biggest and most amazing directory on the planet, and that is the internet. Your perfect editor is out there just waiting for you to get in touch with them.
Which is, of course, part of the problem, isn't it? Because the fact that it's the biggest and most amazing directory on the planet is also what makes it a nightmare place to search because your perfect academic editor is buried, and that means you need to find a way to dig them out.
I like that analogy, yeah. And just because you might be searching for a particular academic subject area, like philosophy or pharmacology, doesn't mean there aren't a lot of people who are going to offer editing or proofreading in those areas.
And the other thing we have to bear in mind when we do internet searches is that being highly ranked by something like Google or ChatGPT doesn't mean those editors are necessarily the best fit for you. It means they're effective marketers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So true. Yeah. And just because someone's website is ranked highly for some niche long-tail keyword search, that doesn't mean that another person who didn't pepper their website with those particular terms isn't worth considering too.
Yeah, which means you still got to do some legwork to make sure you've got a strong batch of good fit editors to get in contact with and have that first conversation.
Be clear, we're not saying don't use the internet, but just make sure that you recognise its limitations. Among all the well-qualified, competent professionals, you will find people advertising themselves as academic proofreaders and editors with little or no training.
Yeah, and they may mean well, but they aren't up to the academic standards you need to ensure they do the job for you that you want them to. Because the industry isn't regulated, academics can be vulnerable to paying for shoddy work.
Yeah. So please, yeah, do carry out your due diligence. So the next place to think about is your own network. If you've developed a solid network of academic colleagues, that could be a brilliant way to get recommendations for editors.
Although, bear in mind that the best fit for your colleague is not necessarily the best fit for you, even if you work in the same subject specialism. You might need a different level of handholding or a different kind of editorial support.
Yeah, in some ways, an academic network is a relatively small resource given the size of the decision. So by all means, tap your network for advice, but back it up with other searches.
Yeah, that's good advice. So the next search tool on our list is social media. Just like the search engines, they're great because they're global, but they also have their limitations.
Yeah, so one of these is that different editors use social media platforms in different ways. For example, some are active primarily on X or Blue Sky and might have a LinkedIn profile, but they only use Facebook for personal use.
So what I guess we're saying is which platform you as the academic uses for your search will determine who you find and who you miss.
Yeah, I think another thing worth mentioning is that most social media profiles are pretty restrictive in terms of what can be included. So you might not get the best sense of fit from what information the editor's included there.
Yeah, that's true. LinkedIn's still probably the best platform for allowing detail to be included, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree there with that. I don't think TikTok's up there just yet, although I do love it. But YouTube is still a good place to check out as well, particularly if you want to get a sense through video of the editor's personality. Or search for editing podcasts.
Yeah, we're not alone. So let's take a look at how you might refine your initial searches. Imagine you found 40 copy editors and all of them look great.
Yeah, they all have experience, they're all well educated and professional, and they all have a keen eye for detail and the appropriate training and qualifications. Where do we go?
Yeah, so you're going to need a way of narrowing down that list to something manageable. So one way you can do this is obviously by checking their subject experience. So, you're a linguist. Does the editor you're thinking of working with explicitly state that they work on linguistics texts? Can they evidence that?
Yeah, and I think when it comes to academic stuff, perhaps some subjects more than others, choosing an editor with subject experience can really help.
Mm.
Now, there's more to an editor than their portfolio, so we're not saying it should be the only thing that you use to make your decision, but it should give you a feel for who's used to working with writers in your academic field.
Definitely. And then another thing you can do to refine your search is by requesting a sample. And this will allow you to see if someone understands the citation and reference system you're using, perhaps.
Yeah, or if they're handling the subject terminology in the way you'd expect, because a philosophy text might need to be copy edited with a different sensibility to a maths textbook.
Yeah, and a criminology handbook for undergraduates might need a different approach to an orthopaedics monograph. A sample from several different editors will give you a sense of each editor's approach and confidence with your academic material.
So a final thing to consider at search stage is testimonials and endorsements. In other words, what other academics say about an editor.
Definitely. So take a look at the testimonials on their website or directory listing. Have other academics been prepared to publicly endorse them? Have mainstream publishers stuck their necks out and praise their work?
Now, testimonials aren't a foolproof way of determining excellence. Again, just like with portfolios, it's more that they give you a glimpse of what the editors have done, who they've worked with, and the impressions they've made.
Yeah, it really is just one way among several of evaluating what's on offer. I just want to add in another thing that we weren't going to talk about, but we should, just briefly. And that is another way of sort of getting a feel for whether an editor gets you is to look at whether they've created content that supports your particular academic specialism. Because the thing about that is, you know, you and I, Denise, are huge supporters of this approach. But when editors create content, they're trying to solve problems, and in doing so, they show rather than tell that they understand your field, that they're interested in what you're teaching and what you're researching. And that can be another indication of whether they're a good fit, whether they're passionate about the same kind of things, even though they're sitting on the different side of the table, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah. So let's summarise. Do your initial searches using national editorial societies, the search engines, social media and your network.
And then refine your search using tools like subject portfolios, sample edits and endorsements.
And content.
And content. Yes, don't forget the content.
So that's it from us. Thank you once again for listening. We really do hope you enjoyed this episode.
If you'd like to help support the editing podcast, we've got a couple of options for you. The first is that you can tip us with a one-off donation of your choosing.
Or you can join our Patreon community. All our patrons get exclusive access to a huge batch of transcripts and extra bonus content for selected episodes.
Both the links are in the show notes. In the meantime, she's been Louise.
And she's been Denise. Join us again soon. Bye.